Hello and welcome back to Hallowed Histories with another ghost story for Christmas. And this week it's the turn of Helena Bacon. Helena is an associate lecturer in literature and film at the University of East Anglia, and also at Anglia Ruskin University and the University of Suffolk. The story you're going to hear today is soon to be published in a collection of ghost stories collected and edited by Spectral Visions Press, and Helena is also currently working on a wider collection of ghost stories set in East Anglia. She has also published scholarly articles on the films of Matthew Barney, the TV series Carnival, Stephen King, and Mexican animation, so that's something for everybody there. But today she's going to be reading for us a story called Fear Not.
There it was, waiting for her the day after her father's funeral, incandescent under the white tube lights of the Bear Brick garage. A 97 Rover Mini Cooper, chili pepper red, four gears, five doors, chrome with dry leather seats. The cold, serrated keys were pushed into her unready palm with an offhand, "I suppose it's yours now," from her mother, who disappeared back inside the flower and card-strewn mess of the house as soon as she could. The connecting door slammed behind her. The tube lights flickered and hummed. She busied herself with paperwork, the rigmarole of it all, owning a car for the first time, taxation, heavy due to its age, insurance, heavy due to hers. At 20, this was the first car she'd owned outright. Not one begged or borrowed, but owned officially outright. Before her father had passed, he'd threatened to buy her one, having obsessed over old minis all his adult life. But he had quietly stalled over his concerns that somehow they just weren't safe. Not safe enough for her, anyway. Flimsy sheets of metal on tiny wheels that could crumple into nothing but smoke at the slightest knock. Now she had one. One that wasn't intended for her. The last-minute purchase of a dead man to play with, the product of hours of window shopping, the shouldn't I, the fuck it, I'm dying thoughts of a man who'd always been so careful with money. And so it appeared one day, an odd little import from Japan, sold to her father by a man who knew where such things could be bought. She meant to look it over, to pay deference to its history and cast her palms and her eyes over every square inch of it as her father had done when it arrived, to know it as he had. Hours studying every pipe, every wire, every little piece of the cracked walnut dashboard, but she found she didn't like to stay in the garage long. The lights popped and buzzed, the glass sounding like it might shatter over her any minute. The air seemed to shrink away from her the moment her foot stepped down from the house onto the concrete floor. There had been a Jaguar in there once, a few years back, another one of her father's once-in-a-blue-moon-when-the-planets-are-aligned purchases, a man who knew a man who knew. Her mother had taken one look at it and said it was haunted, said someone stood and watched in the corner, in the dark spot where the fluorescence couldn't quite reach. Her father had scoffed and denied it, shaking his head in front of his wife, turning later to his daughter and saying, "It's true, you know, she's right, it's his," he says, "his, the man in the corner." The car was sold the same month. Now someone else stood in that corner and watched, she was sure, though her mother didn't mention it. Her mother refused to go near the garage, skirting as far away from the door as possible. The tube lights heaved with electricity whenever she hit the switch. She couldn't feel anything of him, but still, who else could it be? She hedged her bets, called out, "Hello, Dad," or "Bye," whenever she went near the car. Sometimes she felt an uncomfortable need to check the new old machine was still there. Day or night, an anxiousness she'd never had before, like a hand round the back of her neck that pushed her forward. It was always where she'd left it, standing, waiting. It seemed large despite its obvious near ridiculous miniatureness. It seemed to take up more space than it should. Its flecked paint reflected things that weren't there. One day, when the urge to see it again grew too strong, she opened the door an inch and saw something reflected on the bonnet, growing. She only just managed to lock the door as the shadow touched the doorstep. Dark fingers reached through the crack into the house before withdrawing. "Best stay put, Dad. For now." Soon after that, the garage lights were always on. Her mother endlessly told her to switch them off. It was the only thing she said to her daughter anymore, the pair of them rattling around the house in grief, spinning separately like clocks set to different rhythms. She was careful to abide, but they came on nonetheless. Lying awake in the silent dark of her room, while her mother slept in between bouts of stifled tears, she would hear them, the chink of the filaments overspilling with white, the hum creeping out from under the connecting door, sliding up the stairs towards her. She could feel it through the metal legs of her bed, feel it in her ears. She would tiptoe barefoot and shivering down to the door, half blind with tiredness, the night-drawn shapes of the house unalarming and familiar to her after so many years. She would open the door at the far end of the hall and flick the plastic switch down and off as soon as she could, not let anything soak into the rest of the house, static crackling through her fingertips. 5 minutes after she'd crawled back into bed, on they came again. During the day, after hastily retrieving something from the garage freezer, putting away the lawnmower, packing the last of her father's power tools into cardboard boxes, she would do the same. As soon as she was back within the walls of the house, the garage ceiling buzzed. The car gleamed behind the door. "Hello, Dad?" Her mother soon grew impatient with her. "It won't do leaving it there to seize up. He didn't buy it for it to sit and rust. Get it away or sell it." So finally she resolved to take it out. Swinging the wide metal door stiffly upward from the outside, her breath fogging as it fell out in sharp bursts, she opened up the garage to the mealy grey swirl of January. The street bald and peaky now the Christmas lights were down and away. She stood looking at it a minute, the car, exposed to the limp cloud that hung in roomy swathes above them, like the eye bags of a sick person. The whine of the tube lights seemed to get louder. Had she switched them on this time? She couldn't remember. She folded her pristine owner's papers into the tiny glove box and thumbed the rough edge of the ignition key before inserting it. Metal teeth grated against metal teeth. The interior shined. It still smelled like the leather cleaner her father had poured over the seats as soon as he got it home. She was still away at university then, caught between exams and bad news. "Fear not, little one, I shall protect thee," he had texted her along with a picture of his new purchase, sat luminous on a dingy showroom floor. That was when he could still drive, was still at home, could still hold a chamois, before he was sat day and night in a bed that moulded itself to a dying person's body, before he was disappearing in a hospice. He was in there a month, on and off, trying to leave but failing, opening his eyes each morning and hating the fact they still opened. The tube lights above him whirred in time with his driver syringe, a little piston pumping him away too slowly. They had held the funeral service in the garage, coffin on his workbenches, amongst his tools and his wall's ice cream tubs full of bulbs and screws and parts that might have ended up on his new car, parts he had hoarded for years before he'd even bought it. He'd always coveted minis. He'd eye them in the street and mutter, "They should give that to me, I'd treat it right," following them sometimes a little, or circling them in car parks to double-check year, make, model, specifics that had passed her by then. "What about me?" she had sent him in reply. "Fear not, little one, I shall protect thee too," came the answer. Now the little ones were one together. Her legs slipped on the seat leather. The pedals were small and hard underfoot. She recalled he had told her the car had spent its first years on the hot streets of a Tokyo suburb, desiccating. Despite her father's efforts, the cracks of mummification still showed on the chair backs, the vinyl of the rearview mirror, the withered plastic of the window wipers. Japanese symbols were stuck on the sunshades, the only other signs of its previous life. She tried to imagine someone from the East sat where she sat now, touching what she touched. What would they say? To see it freezing under the cold cloud bank of an English winter, to hear it creak in her tentative hands. She ran her palms over the faded steering wheel. Then she pushed each button on the console and manoeuvred the stiff leather-wrapped gear stick into each of its numbered cages, one by one. She studied the tarnished wooden panelling on the dash, cracked along one side. This flaw had not stopped her father polishing it until his chemo-raw wrists ached. The marks were still visible, glossy little circles of pain and effort getting ever smaller. She reached out to touch them, but stopped herself, her hand millimetres from those tight little whirls, left behind like recent fingerprints. Her father had had his hands on them only 4 weeks ago, on a final day trip home from the hospice. She would leave these marks as long as they lasted. She turned the key in the ignition, absorbed the growl and hack of the engine living once more as its energy vibrated heavily up through her feet and knees, and backed out onto the driveway. She didn't notice the lights in the garage going out. It went out every day after that. She went with it. Further and further they went together, every day, without fail. They passed fields and farms and shops, motorways, tracks, police stations, takeouts. Miles and miles of back roads. They'd leave earlier and return later and later every day. After 1 week, 1 week of stiff gear changes, 1 week of tearing up to 70, 80, 90, speeds that shook her brain inside her skull and rattled the thin plate metal on its old-fashioned chassis, 1 week of a dead ache in her left foot from the old oil plunge clutch she couldn't stop. The old radio would come on with the first turn of the engine, sounds slipping in and out of static, crackling voices, hissing, frayed pieces of old songs her father had liked. No more heroes, Eaton rifles, wish you were here. Hello, Dad, she'd say every time she got in. Bye, Dad, every time she left it, alone for the night under the ever-returning hum of the lights. Her mother, silently, unknowingly pleased she didn't have to look at either of them anymore, said nothing. It sat in the back at first, behind her. People in the street would wave at the little car as she drove by, their faces falling when they saw the rear window, their guts spooling upwards into their throats. She waved back at first, then she stopped noticing them. After a while, it began to put its hands round the back of her seat, its rake-like fingers touching the tops of her shoulders, the back of her neck, small scratches barely noticeable under the rumble of propulsion. Hello, Dad. Her right foot pushed further south, her eyes fixed only on the dark tip of road ahead, on the white strips of paint that shone under the glare of the headlamps, channeling her forward. Then, one day, it sat in the front, next to her. Its fingers grasped her knee. It switched the radio on and the aerial flooded her with indistinct sounds so loud it rendered her own thoughts irreformable. Then the songs started again. They watched their Rome burn, hot ashes for trees. She stopped seeing what happened behind her. The near misses, the cyclists that fell as she grazed their pedals, the pedestrians that felt the cold shove of movement at their backs as she passed millimetres from their legs. Cats, dogs, foxes, badgers, rabbits, and something that felt too large and hard to be animal, strewn under the turn of four wheels. It sometimes let her go home for an hour or two. She would get out like she too was made of oil and gears and crawl heavy as metal towards her bed and asleep without dreams. She'd wake, stiff and folded, just as she had left herself, and climb back behind the dash within minutes. Its anemic eyes were always open. They watched the door for her. Cameras at empty forecourts captured two faces under the bone-white glow of pump lights before cutting out. She spilled fuel over her feet before feeding the car, head tipped back, watching the bulbs snap, breathing in oily fumes. She went faster and faster, leaving smoke and crumpled metal in her rearview mirror, the sound of horns and the screeches of tendon-taut brakes, the cries of others. Sirens never seemed to catch her up despite the tiny engine. It turned to look at what it had done. Her eyes looked only forward. The force of her turn slammed her head into the car's thin glass window. Cracks formed. Something awoke in her, something just strong enough for her to quietly think, "Why did you do that, Dad?" It didn't answer, but dug its fingers further into her leg and leaned nearer. She began to leave the road. Later, she turned and turned in a field lined with trees somewhere in the dark, their old snapped branches covered in nothing but New Year frost and fret. Black smoke plumed from the bonnet and exhaust, the wheels sliding and sliding in ever wilder circles. The engine vomited out oil and water as it screamed razor dry into the night, her eyes huge behind the splintered windscreen, pupils so far back they seemed to be scanning her brain for signs of life. It looked forward through them. She let it, knowing then that it was not her father, never was, that it had kept him from her. Grain and dirt and stones flew out from under the crooked wheels like gun rounds, grass rubberized, crushed under the bleeding tyres. Black shadow sat in the hollows of her new old face, the flesh taut round her skull. Her hands clawed themselves around the wheel, knuckles so rigid and raised they tested her skin. Round and round, as the engine choked above a lattice of black stalks, flat and smouldering, the tree spun closer. It turned the radio up.
The Hallett Histories podcast was hosted by me, Richard Shepherd, and produced and recorded at the UEA's Media Suite. Find out more about us at hallett-histories.org or write to us at hallett-histories@gmail.com. Also, why not check out our YouTube channel and our social media on Instagram? Thank you very much for listening.